We're talking about educational video games and how we teach our kids. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer. Ken, thanks for being here. So these games have been around for a long time. Do you remember Reader Rabbit and Math Blaster from the 80s? There was a market long before the dawn of our tablets and smartphones that are everywhere. The Entertainment Software Association's data on gaming this year, 3/4 of Americans have at least one gamer in their household. And more than 200 million people in our country play video games. How do you feel about kids playing educational video games? Have you noticed an uptick in gaming with your child since the pandemic? We're at 800-642-1234. Jennifer Javornik is Vice President of Sales for Filament Games. She works with clients on how digital learning games and simulations can teach students of all ages, and she's a founding member of the Wisconsin Games Alliance. Jennifer, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for having me. Good morning.
Well, give us the lay of the land. What is the range of video games that are used in education now as you see it? Where are we at?
Yeah, I mean, we are in a great time for educational games. As you mentioned, like there's a long history of them, but it's really when we got to the game software technology kind of was advanced enough to kind of efficiently make high quality games. The graphic cards were good enough to like have games that look like games. So today you can get educational video games on basically any type of device. There's devices there are games that are made specifically to be played in school, supported by a teacher. There are games that are marketed more towards the parent market, so that for kids who want to keep learning at home. And today people play educational games, you know, on PCs, on browsers, on tablets, on phones, on Switches and PlayStations, and they also play in virtual reality and augmented reality. So there's a lot out there for people to play with.
Okay, so how do you divide a line in the sand and say that game is an educational game and this game over here is not? How do you define it?
Sure. Well, for us, the really big demarcation is educational games want you to have an amazing time in the game. They want you to feel confident. They want you to grow your skills. They want you to feel engaged. They want you to feel self-motivated to continue. But that's also true of an entertainment game. So that's not quite different. Like if you're just playing Call of Duty, you're motivated to keep moving forward in that game. The difference with educational games is we really want whatever you're learning in the game to transfer to the real world. So we want, if it's a game about learning about fractions, we want then a student to be able to take their worksheet and their pencil and actually work with fractions, you know, with a new understanding.
Okay, so you're actually building real life skills that have some transferability into their world and into the classroom learning that they're getting from the teacher.
Absolutely. Yeah, a well-designed game is all designed not only to teach you and let you experiment with the skill, but to also really to transfer so that you can use now that knowledge, that skill, that behavior in the real world.
We're talking with Jennifer Javornik, who's with Filament Games, where she works with companies and organizations on their digital learning games and their simulations, and taking your calls, your questions about educational games. Do you play them with your kids? What video games do you remember from school? Did you die from cholera on the Oregon Trail as a child? Maybe you traveled the world chasing down Carmen Sandiego. Join in with the video games you remember as a kid and where you see their place now at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Jennifer, how has the pandemic affected the world of educational video games?
Well, there are a lot of businesses and organizations struggling. It has really, in a lot of ways, educational video games are a tool that are ideally suited for the pandemic. The great thing about educational games, a well-designed one, is the game not only teaches you the material, but the the game teaches you how to play itself, and you're with the game for a period of time. So over time, the game can see where you are and provide you just enough challenge to kind of keep you motivated to play on. You know, why it's ideal in these times is that so many kids right now are in distance learning and don't have the benefit kind of a teacher with them by their side checking in on their work. So it's actually a tool that can be played independently, you know, as well as in a classroom, but they work really well. They're designed to be played independently. The other great thing about educational games is that educational games today, you know, you don't get kind of a manual to explain it to you. The game kind of in the game teaches you. So it's a really nice tool to be used when students are working independently.
Well, it's interesting you say that a well-designed game can really meet the child where they're at in where they are at with their learning, and kind of modulates maybe to the level that the child is at. Can you explain that more?
Yeah, I mean, there's a teaching theory that we use a lot in educational games, which is called the zone of proximal development. So you want your player in that zone of feeling confident that they have the knowledge and skills to accomplish the task or solve the problem, but it's not below the zone where it's so easy that it feels tedious and boring. And it's not so higher than the zone that it feels so unachievable and you just feel you lose hope because you just don't feel there's any way possible that you're going to get there. So we try to keep your player just in that interesting place where, okay, I think I can do this. I don't really see it. I might have to experiment. I might fail a couple of times in this game, but I'm confident that I have what I need to get going. So that's what I mean, is that, you know, games can be really adept at kind of adjusting to where the learner is. And then a term we use is scaffolding. So you think of it as scaffolding in a construction zone. Scaffolding means like they just slowly kind of build you up and provide supports as you're playing the game. So well-designed games keeps you in that zone of proximal development and then scaffolds the learner, kind of slowly introduces new supports, new ideas, new challenges to kind of grow in their learning and acquisition of skill or knowledge.
Is this scaffolding pretty common among video game developers, or is this something new?
It actually is kind of natural to video games. You actually see it too if you or your kids play any commercial video games. Like a typical game is designed like this. You kind of get plopped into the world and they give you one really simple task to do. And usually that simple task, you can do it. And then the confetti cannons are released. Like there's a celebration, you did it, the game claps for you. And then they say, okay, you did that. Now try this new thing, which may be repeating what you just learned, but then let's introduce a new concept. So that's why if you ever, it's amazing to me when I watch like a six-year-old play this really complex game and you think, how does this six-year-old have the skill to play this? Well, the answer is they weren't handed the whole game on the first time they tried it. They started really simple. There was a lot of reinforcement and reward. There was opportunities to fail. When they failed, they can start right away and try again. And then slowly over time, the game introduces new challenges, new features, new quests.
Let's pause there. Bite-sized chunks. We're talking about educational video games with tech gaming industry executive Jennifer Javornik. We'll be back in a minute here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking about educational video games and what can be taught through gaming. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We know that learning through play is an important part of a child's development. Video games are a form of play, very popular. According to a recent survey by the Entertainment Software Association, more than half of parents surveyed say They play games with their children at least once a week. 92% pay attention to the games their child plays. Do you play video games with your child? Are they educational? What educational ones have helped your child learn a new skill? What are your concerns in using video games in academics? Be part of this at 800-642-1234. Jennifer Javornik is vice president of a video game creator in Madison, and she stays with us. Jennifer, you're talking about that six-year-old developing skills in these bite-sized chunks, you know, that scaffolding approach. Are you concerned at all that the child will then spend more and more time in front of a screen?
So my just concern is that, you know, we live in our bodies that need to be fed and need to be active. I think in terms of my love for educational video games and what we do doesn't change that. So, in my own family, we play video games, we play board games. We also go outside and we kind of enjoy nature and move our bodies. So I don't think that, you know, my personal take is that we should be doing all those things and there's room in the world to do all those things.
My kids were playing last night on the Xbox and, you know, they were racking up points as my spouse walked by and said, "Wow, you guys are doing pretty well there." And one of them looked back at their dad and said, "Dad, we're working together." Like, duh, if you just work together, Dad. But I'm like, I think as you look at these life skills that they develop, it's not maybe just about the specific math or their, you know, whether it is more intensity and they're jumping around, because I know that's another thing that comes out of my mouth. Stop jumping around. Because they get so wrapped up into the video game that they're just pounding, you know, on the floor, jumping up and down. What is going on with that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that you make a really good point that while like educational video games can be developed to teach specific school subjects, even soft skills like social emotional learning, really games, and this is educational games and entertainment games, are really kind of primed to teach, you know, basic 21st century skills. And those we define as critical thinking, creativity, collaboration, and communication. That's just kind of the joy. You're right. Like in a lot of games, they're multiplayer and you have to work together. Most games, whether educational or not, involve a lot of critical thinking. Some games also have the opportunity to be creative and kind of express yourself creatively. So I would actually very much agree with your child.
What are some of the the hardware, the console, kind of the whole physical gaming system that consumers are needing to buy into? What are your thoughts on hardware and what kids need to be able to access these games?
Yeah, so we think a lot. So because Filament Works makes a lot of games that are to be played in schools or with the teacher, we're really conscious of really not making this another thing that of economic disparity. And we want to make sure that we're creating content that all or most students can enjoy. So really the technology is at the point now that you can develop a very robust game that can just be played in a browser. So you just put the URL in the browser and you start playing right there. That's really important for schools, especially as Chromebook sales have grown exponentially over the past 5 years in the US. Chromebooks don't allow you to download anything. It only supports a browser. So as we make games either that we sell ourselves or that we make for clients, most clients are wanting their game to be developed for a browser.
We're talking with Jennifer Javornik, who's a video game tech executive working on digital learning games, simulations for students. We're discussing the rise of educational video games and where they're headed. What have video games taught you? Do you worry about educational video games adding more screen time to your kids' day? Are you a teacher or educator? What do you think about the role of these games in your learning environment? Join in at 800-642-1234. 1-800-324-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Okay, so Jennifer, reveal to us, why did Minecraft take off? I mean, what is it about Minecraft that really, attracted kids and teachers alike?
That's such a great question. And there's probably a PhD student right there who's writing this dissertation. You know, I have two children. Both of them kind of went through their Minecraft phase from like 8 to 10. And now at 13 and 15, they've picked it back up. I think there's a couple things about Minecraft. Minecraft did a bunch of things really well. So there's two ways to play Minecraft, which is actually genius because it attracts different kinds of players. And then players who like to switch between the two. So in Minecraft, there's creative mode, which is just this open world that you can use all of the materials to build anything you want. And you can just enjoy it. I remember one year when my child was younger, for Mother's Day, she built me a spa in Minecraft as my gift, and then showcased it to me, and it had a pool and it was by the ocean and it was gorgeous. But then the other mode is more like a game. It's more, that you're actually, that there's threats coming, attacking, and you actually have to mine all the materials, and it has sleep and wake cycles, and for people who are more competitive, who want the challenge. So I think that's one thing. And I think honestly, Minecraft built on a love we already knew exist, which was kind of the love of Legos, like building anything you want. Like you can just imagine it and you can build it and you can experiment. And when you're done with it, you can take it all down and start again. But now it was Legos in this fantastical world where, creatures and humans were like interacting with your space. I think a little bit, probably kind of an unforeseen thing, is that Minecraft is not an easy game to learn. And that's actually, when we talk to our friends at Minecraft EDU, that has been the biggest challenge for them to really get Minecraft EDU adopted in schools, is there was never a lot of work done on the beginning of the game, like the tutorial to get it in it. The scaffolding is not that great. So I think on the entertainment side, what it became is that if you downloaded Minecraft and just were playing, it was kind of hard, but you kind of needed your friend to come over who played Minecraft to like show you their tricks on how to do it. And you had to go to the internet to kind of research how to play Minecraft. So when you hear, I think to answer your question, why Minecraft is a great tool for schools, is it's actually just you can use it as a big sandbox. You can use it as a big tub of Legos to teach all kinds of things. You can look at STEM applications and use it to teach, math and physics and different physical problems. And then teachers have really created also a way to teach like ELA and languages through like developing stories in Minecraft.
Time and a buddy would be helpful tools in Minecraft.
Yeah. And unfortunately, that's what you find in education, and what the Minecraft EDU has created a whole bunch of like materials outside of Minecraft to kind of try to help teachers learn it so that they can teach their case, but there's still a big adoption curve. So we'll see. I know they're working hard on kind of making Minecraft like something that like everyone can feel confident just jumping in and learning how to play.
Jennifer, take us to Wisconsin. What role is our state playing as a developmental hub for these video games, these educational video games?
So, Wisconsin has really been a pioneer of this latest wave of educational video games. We were really fortunate to have one of the foundational researchers on this current wave. His name is Professor James Paul Gee, and he wrote a really important book in the industry called What Video Games Teach Us About Learning. And he was an academic, and he started to observe all these things we've talked about, how games kind of create this world of experimentation. It creates a world where players are encouraged to assume an identity outside of themselves and through a process of trial and error and critical thinking kind of solve things. So his big revelation and why his book is so important is it just said, hey, look at, this is what video games do well. I've kind of discovered the secret sauce of why everyone's play them. And really games are a learning tool. So from there, it was really natural for people to say, like film and games, like, wait, what happens if we made games specifically for learning using video games? What kind of power could we harness there?
Well, let's pause there as we explore the intersection of education and gaming with tech executive Jennifer Javornik. She's vice president of a video game development studio in Madison. Has there been an uptick in video game use at your house since the pandemic? Join in 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up after a news update on the Ideas Network. We're talking about educational games, how we teach our kids. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. How many times as a parent have I said you better finish all your schoolwork before you turn on the Xbox? But educational video games are taking the education industry by storm as we are living through it in the pandemic. Technology is really changing, altering the way we educate kids. Teachers are utilizing widely played games like Roblox and Minecraft, as we've been talking about, to demonstrate principles like climate change, like cellular biology, how to build ancient civilizations. How do you feel about kids playing educational video games? Have you played them with your child? What do you think constitutes an educational video game? Is there a gray area? It's 800-642-1234. Jennifer Javornik is a video game executive working on educational tech development, and she stays with us. So, Jennifer, as we discuss the industry, are there universities here in Wisconsin that specialize in teaching students video game development? How do they, you know, develop a pathway to getting jobs in this area?
Yeah, so Wisconsin has some really great programs to make video games. And that was actually one of the tenets of our work with the Wisconsin Games Alliance, that traditionally people would, you know, get degrees in video games in Wisconsin and potentially see their only option was to move to the coast to go work in the industry. Meanwhile, we were here struggling to hire people with the right skills. So we've really now been working with the universities to try to make sure for industry to kind of share with all these programs, what are the tools and technologies and skills that we're looking for so they can adapt their programs to kind of produce candidates who have the skills that we need. Certainly those students can still go to the coast if they want, but for those of them who wants to make games in Wisconsin, there's a lot of opportunities. So really kind of leading the way, there's great programs at Stout, Whitewater, UW-Milwaukee. Recently in the last few years, UW-Madison was the first to come up with, they started with a game design certificate, and now there's going to be a game design bachelor's, master's, and PhD track, which was really the piece of video game development that we were missing in Wisconsin. So students have the option. So generally in the video game business, while you have kind of solo developers who are pretty good at everything, coding, art, UX, design, most students choose to go in one of the professions or one of the fields that make up a video game. So a video game team. So for us, that looks like game designers who really think of how to create the play, how to create the levels, that are narrative writers for the games. There's illustrators and 3D modelers who create all of the art assets for the games. There's game engineers that tie it all together and make it work. There's a really great field that I think is not very well known called user experience. And they really think about, like, how do they make the game playable? Where do they put the buttons and the thing so it makes sense to people's brains, which I think is really cool. It's a blend of like visual art, psychology, and a little bit of technology. So if you're one of those in-between people, it's a great profession. sound design, production. So yeah, so we have all over the state, different schools have different programs, but they're really, you in those programs, you will be making with teams video games in your student portfolio. And companies like Filament, we hire people right out of school, as long as they can show their student work or their independent work where they've actually contributed or made games that we can play. We're a company that is open to hiring graduates and giving them their first role in the video game industry.
How do you make sure that you're mindful that that these games are ones that kids can see themselves in? And how do you approach diversity and inclusion in these games?
Oh, that's a great question. So I mentioned it briefly when I was talking about the work of James Paul G, but one of the findings that are described in his book, that video games are a medium that are really strong at creating identity, right? So think of it, if you play Diner Dash, which is a game where you're kind of managing a restaurant and you're a waitress, you open the game and you're a waitress. And suddenly what happens in your brain is you're like, okay, I'm a waitress. No one fights the identity. No one says, oh, I don't have the skills to be a waitress. They're just like, okay, what do I need to know to to be a waitress? And I'm going to go do it. So that's really a key, one of the tools we use in educational games, because we know one really big part of learning is seeing yourself as someone who is good in that subject, right? So if we make a game where we want to teach you marine biology, we might put you in the role of a marine biologist. And suddenly a student who really has never been to an ocean, doesn't really think of themselves as a STEM person or good at math, suddenly they open a game about marine biology and their brain goes, okay, what do I need to learn? I'm now a marine biologist. So that's a main way. It's kind of a tool that we explore when we make an educational game. We're really also conscious to create games that represent all different types of players, but then secondly, and very purposely doesn't exclude anyone. And really it comes down to budget. So if we had an unlimited budget, we'd love to create avatars tools with like 5 different body types and, 10 different skin tones and all different ways for people to customize to make whatever avatar they want. And kind of those big, rich games that people pay for entertainment have some really complex, huge avatar systems. So that's one way, is just giving a player choice to be able to customize their avatars. And it's interesting, players react different to avatars. Some people love creating avatars that are an accurate depiction of themselves. And some players like playing with their identity and kind of create a completely different character that looks nothing like them, but is something that's appealing to them, and a body they want to spend time in as they play this game. So avatar systems are a great way if you have the budget to create kind of a rich avatar system. A lot of times in educational games, our budgets are modest. So then we really think about, well, if we don't have the budget to create a rich avatar system, what kind of characters can we have that are appealing to our players at their age group that aren't necessarily as close to humans? So we often use aliens, monsters, made up characters,
robots,
animals, just different, flowers, like just different identities.
Sure.
So that people feel like they still have choice. They can still pick something that's appealing to them. But they're not disappointed when they don't find a nose type or a skin tone that doesn't match theirs.
We're spending the hour on the world of educational video games, what the future holds for this format for learning. Jennifer Javornik works in the industry with her clients on digital learning games, simulations that teach students of all ages. Taking your questions about educational video games, what they taught you as a child, how they're being used in your household today. Join in at 800-642-1234. Jennifer, you say that educational video games have modest budgets to bring them to market. What does it cost to bring a game to market?
Oh, geez. Well, there's different size games for every customer, right? So they're not inexpensive to make, mostly because, as when we were talking about the different professions, it takes kind of an entire team, skilled team with a lot of different roles to make a video game. So generally at Filament, we end up working on projects that are somewhere between 250K and 400K. That being said, I think last year our least expensive game was 75K. Our most expensive game was actually a whole suite of games that were just under $1 million. So you see, there's a lot of variety, and it really comes down to, you know, how many devices do you want to support? Does it have to work on all devices? How rich and intense the gameplay and graphics are? Are you designing a single player game versus a multiplayer game? There's a lot of factors that go into it. But I should note that over 50% of our customers actually, we help them gain the funding to do their work. So we do a lot of work with nonprofits, universities who are applying to grants with an idea. We work with them to apply to grants and support their grant to try to win the money to make the games. We also work with startups who kind of have a concept and they're seeking VC funding, and we help them kind of budget and kind of, we help them flush out the idea a bit so they can go get investment for their game.
So you're saying there are grants out there to help these institutions be able to bring these educational games to market?
Yes, there is. There's actually a huge... There's actually something called the Federal Gaming Guild, which is a loose affiliation of federal employees in different departments who are excited about the potential of games for all sorts of applications. Today, we're mostly talking about games for education, but we've done a lot of games for like games for healthcare, games for training, games for the military. There's a lot of federal applications. One of the Ed Metz is the program officer in DC for the Department of Education, and he's also part of the Federal Gaming Guild. He's gone around to every federal department who has grant programs and kind of asked the simple question of, if someone applied to your grant and as their solution offered a video game, would you consider it? Would you consider it in scope? And he's identified 27 federal grants. Programs that he's perfectly personally talked to who would accept proposals with video games in them.
We're talking about educational video games with gaming tech industry executive Jennifer Javornik. Did you play educational video games growing up? Which ones? Are you a teacher using Minecraft or another game in your class amid the pandemic? How does it work as a teaching tool? What are the limitations, the drawbacks? What are the advantages to these games? What do you want to add about video games? Still time to talk. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with tech industry executive Jennifer Javornik. She works with companies to develop educational video games, and these gaming platforms, they're big business. Roblox is one of them. It's aimed at tweens and teens. It has more than 164 million active monthly users at last check. It was valued earlier this year at $4 billion, according to the Wall Street Journal. What do you think about educational video games? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. Jennifer, I want to make sure that we talk about one of your games at Filament. It's Executive Command, where the player is the president of the U.S. Can you explain what's going on in this game?
Yeah, for sure. So we've been working with an organization called iCivics for over 10 years. It was originally founded by former Justice Sandra Day O'Connor, and she identified that one of the main issues with our country is that people did not fundamentally understand how government worked. And because they didn't understand how government worked, there was this feeling of, well, I'm not going to vote because I don't really understand it. And kind of like a, embarrassment and shame and kind of scared to make the wrong decision. So just people were kind of apathetic or were tapping out of being kind of engaged citizen. So she was kind of, she knew she wanted to do something in that domain, and where she was encouraged to actually talk to James Paul Gee, this professor I was telling you about, who was at UW at the time, who really was at the time just, you know, either had published his book or was working on the research. And my Lord, Sandra Day O'Connor committed to teaching, to developing a platform where all of the teaching, all of the content would be developed at educational video games. And now today, iCivics has over 21 games completely free on iCivics.org, all about every facet of government. So Executive Command is one of their most popular games. And talking about identity, like we did before, this game asks people to become the president of the United States. And you get to go through kind of the life of the president. You know, really ask yourself the question, do you actually know what the president does all day? A lot of people don't. So by playing the Executive Command, you get to, at a really high level, kind of go through some of the tasks that the president do and make decisions for the country. And you kind of see the progress as you make these decisions. It kind of dabbles in like reviewing and approving bills, also some foreign relations work and kind of all doing some public appearances, and you kind of rotate through the different functions of the president.
Do you see that this is a new way of changing, of teaching civics? Are we approaching civics in a new way through these games?
Absolutely. I mean, instead of thinking of civics as just information that you read about and consume, all of these games ask you to play an active role in civics. So whether it's Executive Command when you're asked to be the president, or a game that's really relevant that is also free called Win the White House, where you're actually campaigning and you're in an election, a four-year cycle, and you're trying to win the presidency. It takes civics as something that's not me, something that happens in Washington, something that I don't understand, and it actually invites you in a really welcoming way to actually play the roles of the different roles or the different places in government, and asks you to actually like live it and be in it and experiment in it and kind of be a part of it. I think that mindset shift is just really important and really powerful.
We got a call here. Tay in Grand Chute called in to say that Tay thinks education requires a human touch and a teacher's attention. Jennifer, what part do teachers play in the use of educational video games?
I'm so glad you mentioned that, because all the research show that well-designed video games in themselves are effective. And actually, when compared to, other types of modalities of learning, they're often the most effective. However, what's even more effective than students just playing a video game is the student being able to play a video game in the context of a classroom where the teacher is incorporating the game as part of their learning. So we've developed a whole methodology and teacher training about best practices on how to teach with games. It really thinks about educational games as being a tool to teach the content, but not the only tool. So oftentimes we would recommend to a teacher to kind of introduce the topic to the classroom, to maybe do some pre-video game activities, either group work, either, let's say if it's physics, to do some like physical experiments in the class as a group, and then maybe go to the video game to then experiment further with the subject matter, and then have a post-game wrap-up where everyone can then come back to their seats and have a discussion about what they experienced in the game, what were the moments, what did they learn. So really good examples, we have a game about Newton's laws of motion. So it would be the teacher would introduce it. Maybe they do some physical experiments about Newton's laws of motion, but then you can actually go to the game and really play with the concept instead of like a small experiment at your desk that you're doing with a few people. the game then can expand it to, I think in ours, you're in outer space experimenting with laws of motion. So it's really just becomes a tool and not a kind of a trick or a tool in the teacher's repertoire and not the whole learning experience.
So really blending these concepts, blending it into the curriculum. As we talk with Jennifer Javornik this hour, video game tech executive working on digital learning games, simulations for students. We're discussing the rise of educational video games and taking your insights at 800-642-1234. Jennifer, what is your approach to educational video games for students on the autism spectrum? What are the goals for these games, and how do students with autism interact with games?
Yeah, so so what we know about the autism community is that every person with autism is different. I think the saying is, if you've met one person with autism, you've met one person with autism. So I don't want to do any generalizations, but there are some common traits of students with autism that we can really, that are really great tools for educational games, right? Attention to detail, understanding of rules and how to apply them. Did I say deep attention? Especially if you have a student with a deep interest, if there's a game that kind of matches that interest. I think also just a lot of students with autism, if there's in-game collaboration or communication, sometimes communicating over through typing in a game when you know what you're talking about the game, is kind of a safe place for students with autism to actually practice their social skills, because it's kind of a narrow focused in a very safe way where you don't have to take in the nonverbal cues, the body language, and everything at the same time. We are working on a really exciting new project for a client. It's actually the global pharmaceutical giant Roche, who is working in collaboration with tech giant Harman. They brought us in specifically because they realized in their partnership of creating this product, they were lacking people with really deep educational design skills. So Filament was brought in as the designer, and they're really interested in taking to market an entire world in virtual reality to scaffold students through the basics and fundamentals of social skills. So a lot of students with, and it's geared towards students with autism who are teens and young adults. So as we know, a lot of students with autism struggle with social skills, and the traditional way to practice them are kind of in role-playing experiences where you try to recreate situations with another human and kind of have the social interaction. The issue with that is if you're trying to learn the skills involved with what it means to be a guest at a birthday party, you know, unless your therapist is going all out, it's not really going to look like a birthday party.
Sure.
You probably have a room full of people. You won't. So what we're doing is we're creating these social situations with the scaffolding. It's meant to be used with a therapist so the therapist can adjust.
Yeah, sure. And Jennifer, we're out of time. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. It was great.
Jennifer Javornik is with Filament, and this is the Ideas Network.